I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page.
Hey, Dave, how's everything going this week?
Things are going well. Things are a little bit crazy because tomorrow morning I leave to go to Orlando to a John Maxwell event. But things are going well. How about with you?
It's been a whirlwind of a week. Just staying really busy with things at work. The office has just been buzzing. We just got our new phone systems, so this can be a PSA to any of our members that are listening. We are learning how to use new phones.
And that's going to take a while, trust me. I just putting in my voicemail thing today was a challenge, but I figured it out before I left.
Yeah, I'm excited. I like the new phones, so change is good.
It is, and so we're doing things a little differently today, aren't we? We're in two locations.
We are. Unfortunately, it's nowhere exciting like, you know, the Bahamas.
right.
So, yeah, it's fun. I am set up in my home and you're set up in your home. And I can't promise that there won't be a guest appearance by my toddler. So we're really getting real here on the next page.
We are. And it'll be fine. You know, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be real because the folks that listen to it have real lives just like we do.
Absolutely. And obviously, it's the reason we're doing this is because it's super important to us to make sure that we get a podcast episode out every week. And we're very dedicated to doing that.
That's right. And, you know, it's we're going to make it happen. And at some point, we may try to get a couple weeks ahead. But right now, it's just week to week. And we're here to do it, so maybe we need to talk about this week's email.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you start off? Last week, you gave us a preview that since we talked about diminishers last week, we would go and talk about multipliers this week. So tell us a little bit about this week's post.
We decided that, you know, last week was kind of a downer because we were talking about the fact that sometimes we all are diminishers. And in fact, I received an email this morning from someone who basically said, I finally know what's wrong with me, or something along those lines. But the good news is that, you know, once you realize that you are a diminisher or even an accidental diminisher, there are things you can do about it. And really, all of us need to strive to become multipliers. And that was the title of today's email was, Are You Leading as a Multiplier? And I introduced the topic by talking about two former British prime ministers, William Gladstone, who really everyone said that when you were with him, you felt as though he was the smartest person in the world. But then if you had spent some time with his, I don't want to say counterpart, it really was almost like the counter ego. One was a liberal, the other was a conservative, but Benjamin Disraeli, if you met with him, you would actually come away thinking you were the smartest person in the world. And what that really meant was that Disraeli was a multiplier. He looked for ways to multiply the activities, the mind capacity of those that he was working with.
And so as we discussed with diminishers, there are certainly a variety of behaviors and characteristics that make up a multiplier.
There are. And I addressed just two of them specifically in the email. The five of them are... you know, one of the disciplines is that you attract and optimize talent. Multipliers look for ways to do that. The second was they create intensity that requires the best thinking. And the other was extending challenges to people. The fourth was debating decisions. And the fifth was installing ownership and accountability. And it's interesting that quickly, if you don't really think through the concept of a multiplier, you might think that this is a person that's just real easy to work for and everything's laid back and everything's relaxed. And that's not the case at all. The case is that they really have what the author of the book, Multipliers, Liz Wiseman, referred to as a hard edge. And the point is that they're not less demanding. It's just you don't mind the demands that are put on you, which is kind of interesting.
Right, because that is interesting. It might be easily mistaken for someone who is easy to work for, or maybe doesn't necessarily push you to be your best. But that's totally the opposite of what this person does. If you're a multiplier, you are pushing people to be their best, and therefore making the organization successful.
Right. And so the two that I addressed in the email were actually the second and the fourth. I addressed creating intensity that requires the best thinking, and that was multipliers create an environment where people feel free to think and explore options. And really, we might all quickly think, well, yeah, that's me. I give people the opportunity to think and to work through things. But the only way that a multiplier can truly do that is to restrain themselves from speaking too quickly. Too often, we come up with too many of the answers, and we don't get the rest of the team involved. So the multiplier really looks for ways of leveling the playing field, and not just making sure they're restrained, but making sure that no one else in the group is dominating the discussion.
And so why is this so important? You know, last week we talked about how these behaviors could impact the team in the long run and the short run. And I would kind of like to do that again with these behaviors. So if you could tell us a little bit about the impact this could have on the team.
Sure. A multiplier creating this space and leveling the playing field for the best thinking. In the short run, you're getting your team engaged quickly. You're getting the best thinking to come to the surface when you're looking to solve problems or looking for innovation. So right away, even in the short term, it's really something that is going to get the best ideas out on the table the quickest. In the long term, you know, we can just imagine that if the group is thinking well, if they're working well as a team, if they're really focusing on the best ideas rather than solving problems through consensus, if they're really doing it in a collaborative way, you're going to have the best solutions. But also a long-term benefit is you're going to keep the best people. You know, your real innovative thinkers aren't going to leave.
Before we move on to the next one, I do have a question about this that just came to mind. So you mentioned that for a multiplier, they would need to kind of restrain themselves from always having the answer and letting the other people do the thinking. Does that also mean that this leader is responsible for maybe managing some of the other managing some of the other people, maybe if someone else in the group, right? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So if what you have to do there is if you've got other diminishers on your team and, you know, diminishers don't necessarily have to be the manager. They can be anybody on the team. It's up to the leader to address those issues, certainly in discreet ways, probably before meetings or after meetings. You certainly wouldn't want to call somebody out in public, but basically help them become a multiplier as opposed to a diminisher by coaching them through that behavior.
Awesome. So
the second one that I had there, sorry, I stepped on your
You're moving right along.
I'm moving right along, which is probably part of the problem when we're not in the same room and can't make eye contact with each other. So my second one was debating decisions. And if you think about that concept, it may sound as though this is an argument, but that's not at all the case. A multiplier lets the people in the room challenge each other, debate each other, and waits for the group to debate all the possible sides of the issue before the leader will make a decision. And to me, that is really it's almost a gift for a leader to be able to do that, but you can practice it and do it.
And this is probably also partnered with not making a decision before going into a meeting. Because oftentimes, I think we probably talked about this last week as a quality of a diminisher, is kind of making up your mind ahead of the debate among the rest of the team.
Right. And so what the leader is trying to do here is they're looking to get evidence of the various aspects of the problem or situation that they have. So once they get the evidence, then they're actually looking to allow the group to really comment on the evidence, make sure everybody speaks up, and only then will they come to a decision. And, you know, it's not that the leader isn't making decisions. They're just getting all the impact or the input from their team.
Well, and I can also imagine that one of the benefits of this is that your team feels empowered and they feel like they're heard. Just because the decision doesn't go their way doesn't mean they weren't heard, but I feel like if this is done right, it could really make the whole team feel like as if they won in one way or another.
Sure, exactly. And I think you brought up a very good point there, Marissa, where you said just because their idea wasn't the one that was chosen doesn't mean they don't feel like they were heard. And they do. Mm-hmm. It really makes you feel as though, okay, they heard me out and my opinion was valued, but it just wasn't the one that was decided on this time.
Awesome. I can imagine this is probably a hard one to
yeah,
master.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of those things that you know, through your reflection that a leader should be doing every day. They look for days when they do it well, and then they look for days when maybe they struggled with it and can be a bit more focused on truly setting up the correct kind of debates.
All right, so what's the third one that we're going to address?
So let's talk about the attracting and optimizing of talent. Multipliers are talent magnets. It seems that because they're so open to people's views, people that are very capable and have strong views simply are attracted to working with them. Because a lot of folks have great ideas and they want to go where they can be heard. So if they know, you know, through reputation or through experience that this is a manager, is a leader that's going to listen, everybody wants to work for them.
Right. And this is so important too, because as we always say, people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. So if you've got a multiplier or, you know, a handful of multipliers on your management team, you could potentially be functioning at such a high level with really skilled talent underneath you and as part of your team.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting if you read the book or listen to the book that Liz Wiseman wrote, she goes, you know, there's some people that are bird watchers. And she said, I'm a genius watcher. They really, a good multiplier is always looking for, it's like one of, I think it might have been our second podcast where we talked about searching for buds. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what a multiplier is doing. They're looking for the genius, for the talent everywhere. And they're not necessarily looking for it in their specific discipline. I was in a group coaching session today where I was talking with the group, and I said, you know, what you really want to do is you want to find somebody that has the right mindset, that has the right attitude. Maybe they don't have the skills yet, but you know that they've got the giftedness, the genius, so to speak, and that's the person you want, and then you develop them.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think that this one, quality in particular is something that all organizations should be looking for, as a whole, not even just leader to leader, but I think it's something that's really important and really, again, something that's difficult.
Right. And you know, so the other thing is that if you've got somebody that really is a genius and they're very gifted, you got to make sure that you keep feeding that genius. You know, we don't want them getting bored and going somewhere else. We mm-hmm. want them to be challenged where we are.
And just a sidebar, what can you do about that? How can you make sure that you're continually challenging people?
Well, actually, what that does, Marissa, that moves us into the third gift or the third one on the list here, which is extending challenges. So you really want to make sure that you are taking the people that are on your team. And again, you really have to know your team. You have to know them very well. And you have to look for areas where you see them. They have a gift. They're ready to go. And you have to seed opportunities. You really look for their giftedness, and then you look for an opportunity for them to exercise that and just keep throwing them challenges, because those challenges stretch us and help us grow.
And is that something that should be done behind the scenes? I mean, I feel like that might be an opportunity to recognize someone, take them aside, talk about their growth plan. This, I feel like, goes hand in hand with having a growth plan, and recognizing that person's skills and abilities and discussing, reflecting back on how well they're doing and then talking about what the future could hold for them and setting them on that path.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things we talked about again in this group coaching session that I had today, which was there were two different groups that I worked with. One had six managers in it. The other one had eight managers in it. And we talked about this part of coaching. And so what we want to do with as a multiplier, when we see this gifted area, the book refers to it as genius area. You can refer to it as a gifted area. In your coaching, which in the organization I was working with today, they want their managers to meet with each one of their people at least on a monthly basis. I think you can do it more frequently if it's just an informal conversation. But in those moments is when you want to look for that opportunity and then seed the challenge, so to speak. And like you said, you want to encourage them. One of the things that Liz Wiseman identifies in her book is she says, you know, orchestrate an early win. And I just thought that was a powerful one. You know, you're basically generating a belief within this person of what's possible for him. Because a lot of times we don't think we have the horsepower to do it, but we need a great multiplier to help us identify that.
And now something tells me that this will perfectly transition into the last one, which is installing ownership and accountability.
Yeah, exactly. So the worst thing, maybe not the worst thing, but one of the worst things you can do is you can have a person that really, you know they have this giftedness, but they just seem like, well, you know, I'm not sure that I really want to invest in it. And the multiplier needs to find ways to take that person and really challenge them to engage, to really, really focus. And I think you do this by helping them connect with the why. You know, they have to buy into it, and they have to accept the challenge, and they have to accept the ownership. But sometimes that's a challenge that we have to deal with. And again, we're doing that through connecting with the why. Simon Sinek says, you know, finding your why. We need to define the ownership. We need to kind of name it, but then give ownership of the end goal to that person. Don't let them push it back on you. If you've got a challenge that you've laid out for them, you need to get a commitment from them that they really are going to own it.
Well, and I think also with finding the why and, agreeing on that, it's so important that it's not self-serving, like totally self-serving. Right. I mean, obviously there's probably going to be something in it for everyone. But I think to install that ownership and accountability, it has to be something that the individual can get behind.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you're picking something that they can get behind, something that they've agreed to commit to. And then if they begin to try to give that back to you, you have to just push it right back on them. Mm-hmm. In a polite way, and just say, listen, I'm here to help you. I'm here to coach you. I'm here to mentor you. But you really need to run this race on your own. I'm right there with you. I'm your coach. I'm your mentor. But you're the one that has to take this across the finish line. You may have to provide backup for him. You may have to say, okay, if this is really something that's important for the organization, you work on this and I'll get backup for some of the other daily activities that you have.
Right. So what would it be like working for a multiplier? And I'll also ask you the same thing for a diminisher. Like, how can you maybe figure that out easily? Or what might it feel like to work for a diminisher, and what might it feel like to work for a multiplier?
Great question. So the first, when you talked about what would it be like to work for a multiplier, I had the privilege of working for a multiplier. And he was the chairman of the board of the company that I ran when I was asked to be president. And he had been a man who had been there and done that, so to speak. Very successful businessman, had a successful family business. And it was interesting. It was a business that he really didn't want to run, but his father basically said, son, you need to come home from Chicago, I believe it was, and run the business. So he committed to running the family business and really developed it into an amazing organization. He just happens to be on McNeese Wall of Fame as well. But what he did for me was, you know, just to give you an idea, I was the plant manager at the time, had no aspirations of being president, didn't think that I had what it took to be president, but he recognized some abilities in me to organize, to accomplish some things, and then just really gave me these beautiful challenges. I remember the night that he called me at my house. It was a Sunday night, to ask me if I wanted to be president. So he laid out the challenges. He never, ever gave me answers. He only gave me questions. And it was just an unbelievable experience working for him. It was freeing, because he just would encourage the growth. So that was a lot of fun.
I bet some days the challenge was good, but there are times when you probably were thinking, oh darn, it would be a lot easier to work for a diminisher, wouldn't it?
You know, I never really said it would be easier to work for a diminisher, but there were times when I asked myself, why in the world did I sign up for this? Because the challenge seemed really, really great.
Yeah.
Now, so let's get to the diminisher, because I was going to say, I know you want me to get to the negative side. I think the reality is, Marissa, all of us have worked for diminishers. And all of us have times when we're still working for diminishers. And I think, you know, so what does it feel like? You feel like you're not listened to. You know, I'll give you a little hint of what I might write about for next week. And I think that is, how do we operate in a situation where we're working for a diminisher? Because I think there are a lot more diminishers than multipliers. And I remember one instance, working for a company, and I was working in a machine shop, and I had finished all the work that my boss had given me to do. So I started just cleaning up the machine shop. I was sweeping, and he frequently wouldn't come in till 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. So he came in one day and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm cleaning." And he just started to shout at me, you know, about, "What are you doing? You know, I don't pay you to clean this and that." And it was just his typical modus operandi. You know, people that had worked with him longer said that he had been known to throw parts across a room. So that's kind of the extreme side. But the other diminishers are the ones that just, they don't let you suggest things. They monopolize conversations. And it really causes you to shut down. And the data shows that we're giving about 50% of what we're capable of.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so depressing, isn't it?
So can someone be both? A diminisher and a multiplier? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's just like the gentleman that emailed me today where he said, you know, I guess I just found out what's wrong with me or something like that. It's awareness is the key. Mm-hmm. Once you're aware of behaviors that you're doing that are diminishing others' efforts and thinking, you just have to put in place a plan to correct it.
Right. I mean, because, of course, looking at this on paper, it's a lot more challenging to be a multiplier, but something tells me that, like with all things in our life, if you make habit changes, it becomes a lot easier and it just becomes your new way of functioning.
Exactly. And even in the book, Liz refers to a statement you've heard me say in the past, you know, if we begin to practice this, we can establish new neural pathways where it becomes a habit of acting appropriately, mm-hmm. as opposed to acting inappropriately. So I really think that next week, that'll be a great conversation for us. You know, I'm going to spend some time on the airplane in the airport thinking about this. You know, how can I put this into first an email of what do we do if we find ourselves working for diminishers?
Well, you've already answered my last question then. You know, I always like to ask you what we're talking about next week. So we've already answered that. So I guess I will just close with thank you all for listening again with us this week. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe so that you get automatic downloads with each week's episode. We would love it if you would leave us feedback as a review on iTunes or Google Play. You can also reach us through our email to send ideas, suggestions, or just general thoughts. Our emails will be in the show notes description. I think I covered all the bases there.
I think you did. And I just want to reiterate, you know, send us your thoughts. I was really pleased this week that we had one person this week that sent us a whole list of ideas and topics and things they'd like us to talk about that we will clearly put into our podcast. And, you know, one of them was most influential books. Really what people are hearing when they hear me do, when they read my email and when they hear our podcast, they're getting a window into what I'm learning. And a lot of times it's based on books that I'm reading. So I highly recommend this book, Multipliers. And so Marissa, do you have any special plans for the weekend?
Not really. It's kind of a quiet weekend around here. Unfortunately, our little girl is having just a minor procedure tomorrow, so I think we'll be doing a little bit of relaxing. We recently explored our new library in Jamesville, so if anyone is great. In the DeWitt or Jamesville area, check out the new library. It's awesome, so maybe we'll do a little bit of that.
Okay, good. You know, and again, I still know we have this design in the background of how do we disinfect library books.
I know.
So, well, I hope Isla does well, and I look forward to getting back to work sometime, probably Tuesday of next week.
Yeah.
So, and with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.